Clostridial dermatitis is basically a bacterial skin disease. Usually we isolate Clostridial septicum would be the causative agent from those lesions. And it appears typically as necrotic areas, mostly over the breast tissue. Sometimes, especially in turkeys, you can also find it in the inguinal area. So that area between kind of the thigh and the breast. So discoloration, spots where the feathers are falling out or can come out easily in the skin. And then if you actually feel that skin spot, usually there's gas. So gas production as a result of the bacteria replicating in that area of skin, as well as a lot of extra fluid. So it kind of almost feels like a jelly almost when you palpate it or when you can touch it.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. Anatox, partnering with the world's food producers to develop and deliver innovative programs to efficiently produce safer food. BASF provides sustainable, high-performing ingredients that enhance the quality and productivity of your poultry feed. Kerry, proven on the farm, trusted on the plate. Kerry is where technology is made. The Poultry Science Association is dedicated to advancing poultry science worldwide. Learn more at poultryscience.org.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Poultry Nutrition Black Belt Podcast by Wisenetics, where we bring you the latest in poultry nutrition research and industry trends in approximately 10 minutes. My name is Sam Rochel. I'm an associate professor of poultry nutrition here at Auburn University. And today I am joined by a guest, Dr. Michelle Krom with Food Forward Consulting. She's a consulting veterinarian, and veterinarians are always welcome on this nutrition-oriented podcast. So we look forward to learning about some specific topics today from Dr. Krom. But first, I'll ask you to give a little background about what you're currently doing and your previous work in the poultry industry.
I appreciate that. Yeah. Thanks for the opportunity to come and chat today. So my background is in production. I spent 15 years in turkey production. And you better watch it because I manage nutritionists as part of my jobs at points in time. So I know how you people operate. I'm just kidding. So I started as a staff veterinarian in 2006. 2007, excuse me, at Genio Turkey Store after completing a couple different master's programs and obviously my DVM and worked my way up to vice president of animal health and welfare for Genio and Genio Turkey Store. Mm-hmm. And decided to step away and pursue some other passions about almost 3 years ago now. It'll be 3 years in January, and consulting in the food safety space, antimicrobial stewardship space, and emergency disease planning and preparedness. So really interested in really connecting the dots between producers and policymakers and trying to find those spaces in which we can get a little bit more sustainable and more resilient in the way that we produce food here in the U.S.
Well, I appreciate that background, and I always enjoy talking with all of our guests, but especially people who have a long history in production, who've really kind of been in the trenches and seen some of the things. It's certainly always great opportunity, and look forward to your insight there. I know you've got a lot of experience in turkeys and working particularly with Clostridial dermatitis, and that's something we're going to talk about today. And I know it's a big deal for producers out there. So can you just start us off and tell us what Clostridial dermatitis is and kind of how to recognize it?
Yeah, so Clostridial dermatitis is basically a bacterial skin disease. Usually we isolate Clostridial septicum would be the causative agent from those lesions. And it appears typically as necrotic areas, mostly over the breast tissue. Sometimes, especially in turkeys, you can also find it in the inguinal area. So that area between kind of the thigh and the breast. So discoloration, spots where the feathers are falling out or can come out easily in the skin. And then if you actually feel that skin spot, usually there's gas. So gas production as a result of the bacteria replicating in that area of skin, as well as a lot of extra fluid. So it kind of almost feels like a jelly almost when you palpate it or when you can touch it. There is some confusion sometimes around, well, is it really Clostridial septicum or Clostridial perfringens? Our broiler folks are very familiar with Clostridial perfringens as well as it relates to causing necrotic enteritis. We can definitely find Clostridial perfringens isolated from these skin lesions, but typically that's related to kind of post-mortem proliferation of just what's around and not necessarily Clostridial perfringens being the causative agent. So it's not abnormal to see both when you culture the skin, but it's really the septicum that's driving the disease state.
Okay, great. And what age and stage of production do you usually start to see this pop up?
Great question. So typically this is going to occur in older birds, older, heavier birds, when they're really in that rapid, almost logarithmic growth curve. You know, sometimes in hens and turkey production, but most typically we would associate this disease with heavy tom production and kind of in those teenage years. Probably typical presentation would be somewhere around 12 to 14 weeks on farms that have a pretty chronic history. But really any age kind of from that mid-production stage all the way up to market age from a turkey side of things. Similar from a broiler side of things.
Yeah.
Really, it's related probably to some physiological stress when these birds are really starting to accrete muscle tissue and some of the issues that come with accumulating so much breast muscle mass. So in the broilers, it's going to be very similar. It's going to be towards the end of the production cycle when they're really accumulating muscle mass very quickly.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. And so, you know, obviously beyond the effects on the health and the welfare of the animal, what challenges does Clostridial dermatitis cause for turkey producers as far as production and then bottom line?
So there's several kind of scientific related issues here. One, the biggest one is that we really don't understand the pathogenesis of this disease. So it's been around for decades now. We really don't have a reproducible model in the research space. So it can really create challenges for producers in that when we're trying to assess the efficacy of an intervention or put together a mitigation strategy, we're a little bit shooting in the dark because all of our information is observational, right? Either the disease happens, maybe it happens to a lesser extent, or it doesn't happen. We really don't have data beyond just observing the birds and the incidence of disease. And so that can create and kind of pigeonhole us into potentially throwing the baby out with the bathwater, and that maybe we are having an impact, but we just don't see it clinically because it's not large enough to actually stop the disease cycle. So that's probably the largest challenge from both a veterinary and a producer and even a nutrition standpoint is really all of us from our different lenses obviously have a role in trying to mitigate the disease and different things we can do to help support our producers. But at the end of the day, it's really hard to assess success because it's such a high bar, right? Presence or absence of disease is a really high bar to get to. And because we don't know all the intricacies of how we get to having a diseased bird, that's all we have to assess whether or not we're making headway. And that's pretty frustrating for all parties involved.
Right. Absolutely. Those are, you know, the hardest ones that, you know, they're there and they happen quite often. But, you know, as you mentioned, reproducibility, when you try to get it to happen, it's very difficult. And then the, you know, the solutions piece becomes evasive for sure. So, I mean, do you have any data or idea kind of on the impact this is having on the industry as far as, you know, prevalence and, I mean, obviously, this results in condemns and things. Do you have any idea about the kind of the impact it's having on the turkey industry?
Yeah, I think what we see from a turkey side of things is, I guess, twofold. One is it really impacts what we perceive the antimicrobial stewardship practices within the turkey industry.
Okay.
So as you're probably aware, and a good portion of the audience is aware, when we talk about antimicrobial stewardship, we really are talking about our antimicrobial use.
Sure.
So when we think about stewardship, instead of thinking broadly about preventative medicine programs and all the things that we do to prevent the need to utilize an antimicrobial in the first place, which really is the stewardship piece,
right,
what most of us are default thinking about is, well, how much antimicrobial did we use to get that flock to market, or, you know, to get that product to market if you're outside the poultry industry? So from a direct impact for turkey industry in particular is that we are very lucky in that treatment does work. Utilization of penicillin in the water does ameliorate or reduce the appearance of disease in the flock. So that is good news. The bad news is that penicillin is a heavy molecule. So when we actually look at our stewardship or our antimicrobial use measurements, when you take a heavy molecule and divide it by whatever other number, the number becomes big, right? Because it's a ratio.
Yeah.
So specific for the turkey industry, because this disease continues to be pretty prevalent, top five-ish. Pneumovirus definitely changing the landscape this past year about how those ratings are going to shake out as we move forward. But dermatitis has always been there in the background, and it's a major driver of antimicrobial use in the turkey industry. So the stewardship piece has a pretty large impact for turkeys because the number always looks high. The other piece that you alluded to, which I would bucket more broadly as a sustainability issue. Anytime protein doesn't end up in a package, that's a sustainability issue, right? So in this case, you know, if a bird becomes infected with this disease or develops this disease, it is typically fatal. This isn't something that we're going to treat our way out of, in that we could section off sick birds, give them penicillin, and they'll recover. Really, what we're doing when we run penicillin in the water is a prevention. We're trying to keep everybody else from developing the disease.
Okay.
So in that way, we still have mortality, right? And anytime that protein goes to rendering or is composted or, you know, doesn't make it into a consumer's package, then that's a sustainability issue. So in the broader context, this disease, you know, along with all the other things that our producers are dealing with, can be pretty impactful from a sustainability standpoint.
Absolutely. So if, you know, one of the biggest challenges, the antimicrobial stewardship, I mean, what solutions other than that are out there? And, you know, I guess, how can we evaluate those? And I mean, you already alluded to some of those challenges, but you know, what can we do and what solutions are available to try?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing here is that mitigations take a lot of patience.
Mm-hmm.
So what we do know, again, observationally, is that there seems to be some correlation with environmental contamination or environmental load of the causative agents, although it's really rough to actually isolate Clostridial septicum in the environment. So in general, farms with high levels of Clostridium are more likely to have the disease. So the mitigation strategy is basically to reduce the levels of Clostridium in the environment.
Yeah.
That's really what we're getting at. And doing that is easy to talk about, but really hard to execute, because it's things like walking the flock more frequently to do mortality checks. If there happens to be a bird that does succumb to the disease, once they die, those lesions continue to almost weep. And so there's a high level of contamination associated with where that bird died. So removing that source of high contamination, that litter that was underneath the carcass, is an opportunity to intervene.
Okay.
Making sure overall the litter is dry, that goes for many, many pathogens, food safety pathogens. So in general, dry litter, what happens because these guys are anaerobes is, especially if you have a crust over the litter, you'll get an anaerobic environment sealed off by that wet litter. And that anaerobic environment is what these bacteria need to replicate and grow. And the other thing overall, again, not unique to this disease, is just really being aware of gut health.
Yeah.
Really monitoring your coccycycline in turkeys, managing the worm load becomes very important. Being aware of the other protozoal issues you might have, because what we think is that this disease most likely is related to some type of disruption in the gut barrier, and it leads to the bugs getting out into the bloodstream and eventually causing the disease. So anything we can do to make that gut barrier more resilient and more consistent is going to be important in protecting the birds from developing this disease, especially if they're in environments that have a high level of contamination.
Right.
But all of that takes patience. It might take 3 or 4 cycles of intense intervention before you start to observe again, right? Because the threshold is so high, disease or not, it might take a lot of time to get to that point where you actually have an impact on our measurement, which is just the incidence of disease. And that part is really frustrating. It is for sure frustrating.
Yeah, it sounds like, you know, some of those things on the intervention and management to reduce the load, you know, maybe a better option is just to prevent with those same good management practices to begin with. And so, but as you mentioned, a lot of times, you know, people are looking for quick fixes or big changes. Certainly that seems like might be a challenge in this scenario.
Yeah, I think this disease is very similar to how we maybe think about food safety, pre-harvest food safety,
right.
which is there's multiple levels, right? It's not just one thing that is going to reduce salmonella at the plant door. It's multiple steps. And I would say this disease is very similar to, there's no magic bullet that you're going to put in the feed or run in the water. Those things might help, but that intervention alone is not going to change your observation of the incidence of disease in a flock.
It's part of the overall system to get it down.
Correct. Yep.
Yeah. Well, hey, we're running short on time. I really appreciate this. Again, as the audience is mainly nutritionists, I think this is going to be very enlightening and a lot of things that I know veterinarians are dealing with every day can be new and exciting information for nutritionists not as well versed on these things. So I really appreciate all the insight on this, Dr. Crom.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity.
Absolutely. And hopefully we can, there's a lot of complex and related factors here. So maybe we can have you on to talk about some of those in more detail down the road too.
Sounds good. Anytime.
Well, thanks everyone for watching another episode of the Poultry Nutrition Black Belt Podcast hosted by Wisenetics. If you enjoyed today's show, please leave us a review and some feedback. And if you want to listen to make sure you catch future episodes, please subscribe to the show and so you don't miss any of those. With that said, we're signing off on another episode and catch you on the next one. Thank you.